Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, it's day three in our special series, Evictions in East Boston, where we're exploring the push for a so-called just cause eviction ordinance. The proposal, if passed, would make it harder to remove tenants through significant rent increases in Boston's heated housing market. So far in the series, we've heard from tenant advocates who say there's an eviction crisis in Boston and why they believe a just cause statute is necessary.
We see folks coming into our weekly meetings on Wednesday talking about, you know, my, 50% rent increases, sometimes 100% rent increases.
Sometimes 200%.
Sometimes 200% rent increases. So if 30% is the average, the folks who are the most vulnerable have it even worse.
We've also heard from landlords and developers who believe changing eviction laws could usher Boston towards economic disaster.
How would it cut in a free market world where America is a free market economy, and we come to the world and say, don't invest in our cities? That would be insane.
It will stop all housing construction, period. The unions will be out of luck. The mayor's goal, 53,000 units by 2025, will never happen.
Today, we're going to see what we can learn from another major American city that's had a just cause eviction statute since 1979 and is facing an even deeper housing crisis today.
Fighting for the soul of San Francisco and fighting for affordable housing, and we love that you are here to speak truth to power.
San Francisco, the most expensive rental market in the United States.
Get down! There's a housing crisis in this town. Get up!
According to the rental website Zumper, median rent for a San Francisco one-bedroom tops $3,500 per month.
I've been in the Bay Area almost 40 years. I've never seen it as acute and as rapid.
Carol Galante was Assistant Secretary for Housing at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in the Obama administration. She's currently a professor of affordable housing and urban policy at the University of California, Berkeley.
I mean, the escalation in these rents are happening so fast that, it's been a challenge for people to get their heads around the solutions in the timeframes.
And just how fast?
Post-recession, we have had new job growth of, close to 500,000 new jobs, 480,000 new jobs in the region. And yet we have only permitted about 51,000 new, homes or apartments.
That's almost 10 times more jobs than homes in the Bay Area. And just like Boston, where the problem is particularly acute in one neighborhood, East Boston, in San Francisco, the rental crisis also has a symbolic epicenter.
Make some noise for the Mission!
Yeah!
San Francisco's Mission District. Like East Boston, the Mission is one of the Bay Area's historically diverse communities. In the year 2000, Latinos were 50% of the Mission's residents. That number dropped to 39% in the 2010 census. And here's what the change feels like to at least one Mission District resident, Carlos Padilla.
Whose life is actually worth more? The tech people working for Google, or the family living down the street with another family in the same house because they can't afford it and, they just came here.
So how did San Francisco get to this point of growth and displacement, even with a decades-old just cause eviction law? Well, to find out, let's take a walk through San Francisco housing history, beginning in the mid-20th century.
Really, after World War II, like in a lot of cities, we were not growing. We were shrinking in population, and so we stopped building much housing at all.
Scott Weiner is one of San Francisco's city supervisors. He says the city started growing again in the 1970s and 80s, and along with that growth came the first major rent spike.
Rents were just going through the roof, and so the city adopted rent control in 1979.
But San Francisco's rent control law didn't come without a fight. And it also came after a rash of mass evictions in the city, according to Maria Zamudio, an organizer with the San Francisco advocacy group Just Cause.
Some years back, there had been a mass eviction of Filipino veterans and senior tenants from what used to be a small part of what is now Chinatown. That was one of the first times that tenants really came together and said evictions are unfair, especially when they are targeting really vulnerable folks.
Therefore, that same 79 rent control law also included the city's first just cause eviction protections.
You can only be evicted for certain enumerated just causes, and it protects tenants who live in multi-unit buildings that were built before the adoption of the ordinance in 1979.
So the law applies only to homes built before 1979. However, it has had a huge effect. 75% of San Francisco's rental stock is still under rent control. And yet, it didn't do much to stop San Francisco rents from rising to that $3,500 one-bedroom they have today. There are a bunch of reasons for this. One, the city allows rent-controlled landlords to raise rents to market rates when a tenant moves out, and then rent control kicks in again. Two, there hasn't been that much new housing built. And three, something called the Ellis Act of 1985.
The original intent of this law was to give landlords the opportunity to, quote unquote, go out of business of being a landlord without having to sell their property, right?
That's Maria Zamudio, the housing advocate again. In the intense push-pull between tenants and property owners, the Ellis Act was passed just 6 years after San Francisco's rent control ordinance took effect. The act was originally supposed to help small landlords who wanted to get out of the business. For example, an owner-occupier who wanted to use his other unit for family. A good idea, but City Supervisor Scott Wiener says the law has had some unintended consequences.
What has happened with the Ellis Act is it's not just being used by a small mom-and-pop landlord who lives in one unit and rents out the unit downstairs and just doesn't want to be a landlord anymore. We're seeing speculators purchase a building, invoke the Ellis Act to clear out the tenants, and then try to either sell the units, or under the Ellis Act, you can wait a certain number of years and then rent it out again.
And at much, much higher market rates. In other words, the Ellis Act is being used as a loophole for even more evictions. According to the city's Department of Planning, eviction notices have jumped almost 70% in San Francisco in just the past 5 years. So San Francisco is trying again. Just 2 months ago, the city passed the Evictions Protections 2.0 bill. The law requires landlords to provide a meaningful opportunity to resolve disputes before evicting tenants, and if owners do issue no-fault evictions, they cannot increase rents on the units for 5 years. However, some Bay Area observers say in the long run, the new law won't make much of a difference, and as they've seen with the Ellis Act before it, Eviction Protection 2.0 might end up hurting everyone, landlords and tenants, as much as it helps. Again, UC Berkeley housing professor Carol Galante.
I mean, I understand why communities, you know, have rent control and why it's an important protection at one level, but the problem is it's almost like, you know, morphine where it's masking the pain of for a terminal patient. It's not curing the disease, which is, you know, broad affordability for a community.
There's really only one long-term solution. And on this, everyone we spoke with, city officials, tenant advocates, and housing economists, they all agree. San Francisco must build its way out of its rental crisis.
Getting more housing permits issued both in San Francisco and the surrounding communities and dealing with the regulatory roadblocks, I would say, is number one.
We do need to build, but it needs to be deeply affordable housing if we're actually going to address the needs that actually exist in the city.
Until we deal with that structural issue that we don't have enough housing, this will continue to be an explosive situation.
So we're here in Boston, and as we reported this story over the past several weeks, interviewing San Franciscans, reading local news stories, digging through old laws, we really couldn't avoid feeling that San Francisco is a city at war with itself. Just this past May, thousands of protesters with the Mission District Housing Coalition, they flooded San Francisco City Hall, demanding that Mayor Ed Lee declare a housing state of emergency.
Today, the Mission came out in massive numbers to tell the Board of Supes, to tell City Hall, to tell Mayor Ed Lee that they are sick and tired of the displacement crisis, of the eviction crisis, and of the housing crisis in this city.
And the thing is, demonstrations like these are now pretty common in San Francisco.
We demand that the city of San Francisco,
that the city of San Francisco,
So finally, what lessons do San Francisco's just cause eviction laws hold for Boston? Well, it depends on your point of view. But Berkeley professor Carol Galante said Boston really should take note. There are so many similarities, she says, between the two cities. Both great places to live, both intellectual capitals, both places where companies want to be. But then Galante got surprisingly personal. She's been living in the Bay Area for more than 40 years, she says, and even she can feel, as she puts it, that the calculus is beginning to change.
My children are, you know, in their mid to late 20s, and I worry that they'll never be able to afford to move back to the Bay Area unless they become some big tech executive. And that's not what anybody wants for their community. You want to have a diverse places for people to live who are doing all kinds of jobs. And if we don't get a hold of this, we're not going to have the Bay Area that we love.
Lessons for Boston from San Francisco in part three of our Evictions in East Boston series. Well, let's check in now on exactly where the proposed Boston Just Cause ordinance stands. And with me in the studio are the two Radio Boston producers who have been working tirelessly on this series, Jamie Bologna and Allison Bruzek. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So, Allison, first of all, give us an update on where the Just Cause ordinance currently stands for the city of Boston.
So there was that draft that came out in September, but there isn't actually a formal proposal yet. And the last city council meeting of the year is today, and it wasn't on the agenda, which means we're not going to see something this year. And that's because it doesn't have a sponsor yet. So it needs a sponsor from the city council in order to go through. And then it needs support from 7 of the 13. So we called advocates to see, from the Chinese Progressive Association to City Life, to see what they're thinking and when they're thinking it's going to go through. And they're saying early next year, and they're actually extremely optimistic about a certain city councilor they think who's going to be the sponsor. But, you know, they have reason to be optimistic because a mass vote questionnaire that came out in October, this October, 6 of the current sitting 13 councilors supported Just Cause eviction. So it seems like there is a lot of support there. But when I called the city councilors last week, none of them were willing to commit yet. They just want to see the new language. They want to see the new proposal. They say the draft may be different from what's coming around now, and they'd rather see it. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that since this is a home rule petition, even if it does pass through the city council, it will have to pass through the state legislature as well.
Okay, so it still has some way to go then. And tomorrow, in the final part of our series, we're going to be talking with Boston housing experts and also opening the phones to hear from listeners, from tenants, from landlords. Listeners, we really want to know about what you think about this Just Cause eviction move or proposal. And in fact, I have to say, this series has really touched a nerve already. Jamie, we've been receiving tweets and emails and phone calls about it.
Yeah, we got a voicemail earlier this week from someone who says she lives in East Boston, that she's an owner-occupant. She has one extra rental unit on that property, and she says she's owned the home for 4 years. And she said on the voicemail that she actually likes having the ability to vacate that space as needed.
So what these reformers are saying is that when my mother needs the unit, I won't be able to terminate a lease so that my mother can use it? Or, you know, am I just supposed to not lease it out at all? And what am I supposed to do? This is ridiculous. Either you're going to shrink the housing stock from people like me who are scared to rent at all, or you're going to make people susceptible to eviction.
And so, Meghna, as we've been hearing in the series this week, under the proposed ordinance, if it ever makes it, as Allison was explaining, this landlord, since she owns under 4 units and she occupies one of those units, which she does, then the proposal would not apply to her. And also under the proposal, the landlord could actually take back a unit to use for a child move-in or a parent move-in. So again, the restrictions would not apply to her. But I do think that her call highlights that this type of proposal, as you said, is really striking a nerve among people out there.
It absolutely is, because I've actually received more emails about this series than I have about just about anything else we've covered. For example, there's this one from Rosemary Boutriff. She wrote to us saying, quote, "I am one of those people going through exactly the same thing right now. Landlord converting apartments into condos, and she must vacate. She says she can't get a market rate apartment because she can't prove earnings at least 3 times the monthly rent. She also says she can't get subsidized because wait lists are either closed or there's a 10-year wait for subsidized housing," she says. And then Rosemary closed her email saying she's heading towards homelessness.
Right. And then on the other hand, though, we have a comment on RadioBoston.org from someone called Hey Y'all. And she's writing in part that taking away any incentive or opportunities for landlords to invest in their properties is a mistake. "This year," she says, "I invested $18,000 into an East Boston rental unit, which desperately needed it, and raised the rent 5% for new tenants. Just cause eviction would have prevented me from doing those renovations, and in turn, I would still have a roach-infested rental unit with plumbing problems and an inefficient heating system."
And we also heard from Fred Berman, who sent us an email, and he's in favor of just cause evictions. He writes, quote, "One, we already have just cause eviction with thousands of federally assisted apartments, and still the sky has not fallen." And he also writes, "Two, a 5% annual increase is way above inflation rates. At that rate," he says, "rents would double in about 14 years. This is a far cry from the way rent control was administered in the 80s and 90s.
Right. And to pile it on, there's also this tweet from Jeremy Mendelson, who says the just cause policy is well-meaning but too weak to solve the problem. And he says we need massive new low-income housing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sort of the takeaway here is details matter. And I think our listeners are letting us know that they have a lot of ideas about this and that there's a lot that still needs to be hammered out and discussed.
Well, and we want to have that discussion, and we will tomorrow in part 4 of our series. We will take your calls and your tweets and all your thoughts about a just cause eviction ordinance. And we'll also hear more from people about how evictions are changing the face of Boston neighborhoods. So listeners, keep those comments coming online. Until then, you can either send them to us through a comment on our website at radioboston.org. Of course, there's always Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Well, producers Allison Bruzek and Jamie Bologna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, before we break, there's one more aspect of this story that we're not actually covering this week, and that's the social impact of evictions that has been getting some attention recently. Matthew Desmond is a Harvard sociology professor. He was awarded the so-called MacArthur Genius Grant for his work on evictions in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we spoke with him back in September, and here's a short excerpt of that.
I think that eviction in and of itself is something that pushes families into worse neighborhoods, into worse housing conditions, and it affects them on many dimensions. So one finding from a study we did is that mothers who are evicted experience higher rates of depression 2 years after the event. Eviction can be a very violent and traumatic experience, and that has a staying power.
Yeah.
Eviction also comes with a mark, you know, a record, and that record can keep you from benefiting from public housing. It can affect your credit. It can affect what kind of neighborhoods and that you live in. So I think that eviction is obviously a symptom of things like low wages and very high housing costs, but it also in and of itself functions as a cause of poverty.
MacArthur Fellow and Harvard sociologist Matthew Desmond. You can hear our complete conversation with him and every part of our Evictions in East Boston series, including today's installment where we learn some lessons from San Francisco. It's all at our website, radioboston.org. And remember, tomorrow is part 4. We will take your calls. Stay with us. There's more of the show ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.